It's not playing hands that I shouldn't be playing in a situation that I'm in at that time. Trusting that the long-term nature of the tournament is going to yield enough good spots that I don't need to try to force things. But I also need to make sure I focus. And I know that when I'm too chatty, when I'm too friendly, there's too much personal engagement, I tend to play suboptimally. Well, greetings, everybody, and welcome once again to the Rec Poker Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Fredland, and we are officially sponsored by Running Aces Casino and Racetrack. And we've got a lot of partners who have been contributing, including Next Level Poker, who is our official tour, the Poker is Fun Tour, PokerCoaching.com, and PeakPokerMindset.com. So a couple of quick announcements. If you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast, give us a rating, leave a comment on iTunes. That stuff is all super helpful as we try to grow. And if you have any other feedback on topic suggestions, hand situations, prior episodes, get in touch with me on Facebook, Twitter, email, however that works for you. Today, I'm actually going to be reflecting on where we've gone with Rec Poker. I'm going to be giving some comments on basically the key things that I've learned and that I'm trying to apply over our first several episodes here. So it's really kind of a reflection and a summary of where we've gone for those of you who haven't heard everything. Maybe for those of you who have heard everything, it would resonate with you to try to say what are our key takeaways with that. So if you have others to add, feel free to shoot those out to me. Because certainly I could have missed those. But this is really a reflection, and it might trigger some things in case you're not aware of all the ground that we've covered here. It might trigger some things, and you could maybe go back and listen to some of those episodes that go much more in depth about some of the things that I'm going to talk about here. So let's take a quick break here from our sponsor, and then I will come back with some of my reflections. Running Aces Casino and Racetrack has the best poker room in Minnesota, featuring 24/7 promos on all cash poker games, including earning $2 per hour in comps, plus the most player-friendly tourney structures. Visit runaces.com for daily promotions and the tournament calendar. Running Aces Casino and Racetrack, the official sponsor of Rec Poker.
All right, welcome back. Well, as I am recording this, it's the week right before the Cold Hard Cash tournament that Running Aces holds. It's a six-day one event, $280 buy-in, and they have buyback. So if you get through with multiple stacks, you get paid some for your smallest stack and you get to play your biggest stack. They also have an accumulator bonus. Whoever aggregates the most chips over all their day one bags gets a bonus there. And these are the sort of tournaments that, for whatever reason, I've had the most success in. And so I'm excited they're coming up this week. So I thought this is a good opportunity to think back on our Rec Poker episodes that we've had and really try to bring to recent memory, those key things that I've learned that I really want to apply for this week. So we're kicking off Wednesday night. We're releasing this on Tuesday, so it's pretty fresh here. By the next time I talk to you, the tournament will be over, and hopefully I'll have some good news for you. But also part of this is it's a little bit harder to stay on top of coordinating, getting input from everybody with the holidays here, so I thought it might be a little bit easier for me to just reflect on some things while I gather input from other people for other future episodes. So anyway, I want to start off by thanking all of you who have been involved, and a ton of people have been. I mean, I'm coordinating this thing, putting it together, but we've gotten great input from a lot of folks. If you haven't heard some of the interviews, you may not even be aware that we did a lot of interviews with some local players, local to Minnesota, as well as a couple of national ones. Episodes 20 through 43 are primarily interviews. There's some other things in there, but if you haven't heard these, or if you have and think it might be a good idea to go back and listen to them, we had interviews with players such as Ku Vang, Aaron Johnson, Mark Hodge, Chris Fox Wallace, who's a World Series of Poker bracelet winner, Mike Schneider, who is a Minnesota Poker Hall of Famer, Jonathan Kim, Jason Seitz, Vlad Revniaga, Matt Hamilton, John Redding, Joe Bernard, Zach Elwood, Hunter Sitchi, Chris Hansen of Poker Night in America, Jim Lavore, Steve Olson, and Brian Soja. So maybe you weren't aware of those, but go back and listen to those. There's some great stuff in there. selfishly, this has given me an opportunity to meet some fantastic players, and most of them I had a chance to talk with off air and learn even more than you'll learn through the episode. So thanks to all of those guys. I also want to thank especially those who are giving us regular weekly contributions. Jonathan Little, Mike Schneider, Chris Fox Wallace, and Dr. Trisha Cardner. Thanks to you guys. And also a ton of recreational players who have contributed by giving input, being part of the book study, allowing me to record them as we talked about it, as well as just a part of a ton of discussions that I've had offline as I've wrestled through different parts of my game. So much of what I've learned has come from these conversations with pros, with semi-pros, regular recreational players, and just hobbyists who have a desire to learn more. So with that, I want to take another quick break for Running Aces. We'll come right back, and I'll give you my main takeaways from our first year of the podcast. Running Aces Casino and Racetrack has the best poker room in Minnesota, featuring 24/7 promos on all cash poker games, including earning $2 per hour in comps, plus the most player-friendly tourney structures. Visit runaces.com for daily promotions and the tournament calendar. Running Aces Casino and Racetrack, the official sponsor of Rec Poker. All right, so I wanted to do a top 10 list of things that I've learned, but I had 11. So I hope that's okay. I've got a bonus one for you. The first thing that I've learned that I'm really trying to apply is patience with starting hands and really trying to have a framework on what hands I'm going to be entering pots with and what my overall strategy is. Now, clearly, things will adjust based on your table dynamics, where you are in the tournament, chip stacks, all those things. But for me, having a general framework of saying, here's my default. Here's the hands that I open with if it's folded to me. Here's the hands that I call with. Here's the hands that I three bet with. All of those things, having a framework by position has helped me a lot because some of the decisions are just made already. I don't need to expend so much mental energy thinking, what should I do here with queen 10 in middle position? I just kind of know already what I'm planning on doing. And so it also helps me avoid any other suboptimal decisions that I could have because either I'm overconfident, you know, I'm winning a few pots or I think I'm running over the table, so I start playing too many hands, or I'm bored because I'm playing disciplined and I just start getting bored, so I start playing hands that I shouldn't be playing. So having some sort of a framework of the hands that I'm quote-unquote allowing myself to play and things that I'm not allowing myself to play, that's been very helpful. And I put that in the category of patience. I put that, you know, it's a discipline, it's starting hand ranges, but ultimately what it is it's patience. It's not playing hands that I shouldn't be playing in a situation that I'm in at that time. So patience with starting hands is the first one. The second one is the power of absolute position. So this is first recognizing the difference between absolute position and relative position. So absolute position is really, being on the button would be the ultimate absolute position. It's being last to act on the flop, the turn, and the river relative to everybody else in terms of geography. Relative position is more around what's your position relative to the aggressor or who has control of the pot? So that may or may not be the same as absolute position. So if we focus just on absolute position, the power of that for me has become increasingly more front of mind. It's not just getting to be last to act for more information, but it's also the ability to control the size of the pot. If I'm last to act, I can control it by checking back, or I can just call rather than raising. It also brings with it the ability to put pressure on your opponents through betting and raising. It also gives you the ability to float for delayed steals. Basically, the way that I boil this down is if you have absolute position, I believe it increases the probability of you winning the hand, but I also believe it increases the expected amount that you win when you win. And I also believe it decreases the expected amount you lose when you lose. And so all of those things flow into me to say there's incredible power in having absolute position. And that's why my starting hands grade so much based on position, because I believe in that so much. The third thing is the relative position when I'm out of the blind. So that's something that I hadn't really considered about until I started having some of the conversations is, you know, if you call out of the small blind or if you call out of the big blind, you're usually going to have, well, in the small blind for sure, the big blind sometimes, you're going to have the worst position in terms of absolute position the rest of the hand. So that's a negative. But offsetting that a little bit is that typically you're going to have the best position relative to the preflop aggressor. So for example, somebody in earlier middle position bets or raises a preflop, and they get called by the button, and then you call out of the big blind. Yes, you have the worst absolute position, but you have the best relative position because typically you're going to check, and the person who has control of the pot, the initial raiser, is going to continue. And then you'll get to see what they do, you'll get to see what the button does, and then you'll have the opportunity usually to close the action. Or at least you can kind of see how the button reacted to that raiser. So so there is some relative position out of the blinds that comes with that, and it's tricky to play out of the blinds, but I think this is a key element to playing successfully out of the blinds, is recognizing the power of relative position there. The fourth thing that I've learned is really patience, again, patience, but patience in finding spots. So what I mean by that is not forcing spots that just aren't there. So sometimes I'd get impatient. I think, oh, I've got a great image, and I'd start trying to take advantage of spots that really weren't there. This patience here comes into trusting that the long-term nature of the tournament is going to yield enough good spots that I don't need to try to force things. If the spot's not there, I mean, obviously your hands are one thing, but spots are there. You can be card dead and you can be spot dead. And when you're in those situations where you're seemingly spot dead, I think patience, again, is a critical piece of tournament poker. So being patient and waiting for those spots to come, trusting that they're going to come over the long run. And if they don't, then at some point you're going to need to take some shots. But usually those spots are going to come if you're in a tournament with a reasonable blind structure and those sorts of things. The fifth thing is focusing on reducing variance. So what I mean by this is being willing, well, I mean a number of things, but one of the things is being willing to take on a bit more risk. Obviously, we don't like risk, but willing to take on a bit more risk of losing the pot. So in other words, increasing the chance that I could lose the pot in exchange for reducing the risk of losing a bigger pot or busting the tournament. So there's a little bit more short-term small risk increase in terms of the hand, but reducing the overall risk of the tournament. So that might include doing some checkbacks for pot control. So you have middle pair, you have top pair on a scary board, all of those sorts of things. Rather than keeping hammering people, making them pay to catch up or pushing them off the pot, there's some value in just checking back when you have some equity in terms of pot control. You also help underrepresent your hand and those sorts of things, which are other issues. But generally, just this idea of reducing the size of the pot, even though it means on occasion you might get drawn out on in a situation where a bet would have pushed them off the pot. That could happen. But overall, this is a variance-reducing sort of technique. Another thing is doing less post-flop check-raising or re-raising of continuation bets. So it's the same idea here, but just trying to play a more reasonable pot size when you don't have a monster hand. So getting less tricky maybe as well. So if you have a hand, reducing the variance by reducing the size of the pot. And if you don't have a hand, just not going crazy with things there, making sure that's a legitimate spot and just not doing as much check raising or re-raising of people's c-bets, that sort of thing. The sixth thing theme for me is really understanding my hand equity and not wanting to be raised off of that. So Fox and some others have some great thoughts on this. You know, if I have pocket fours and the flop comes, I don't know, ace, seven, six, I don't really have a lot of hand equity. So if it checks to me and I bet and somebody re-raises me, I don't care. I just fold. It's not a big deal. Or if I have great hand equity, if the flop is eight, ace, seven, six, and I have pocket aces, and I bet I'd love to get re-raised there. So I'm very polarized there. But if I have a hand that has some equity that can't withstand a re-raise, checking back might be a very good option. So for example, if it's ace, seven, six, and I have something like nine, eight, or say 10-8, something like that, where if it checks to me, I think a 10, a 9, or an 8 might all be good here for a pair or for a straight. I might want to consider checking back, even though a bet might get my opponent off of it. If I get check raised here, I have nothing I can do except for fold. So I have some hand equity. So that's an example there, at least thinking through that. If I have some hand equity but not a huge hand, I may want to play as small a pot as possible until I make a bigger hand, because I want to continue in that pot. I don't want to have to fold a significant amount of hand equity. The seventh thing that came to mind was something I mentioned a little bit earlier, but the power of underrepresenting your hand. So when you check back a flop, or say you bet preflop and then you don't continuation bet, or in any other way, if you show weakness, some players are really going to grab that as extreme weakness. And if you have a pretty good hand, you've underrepresented that hand and you can take advantage of your more aggressive opponents. So for example, say you call in late position, or you raise in late position with ace 8, and the flop comes ace 10-4. And the guy that called you out of the blind checks you, and if you just check back, you've completely underrepresented your hand. They never put you on an ace. They maybe should, but they never do. And so then if a king or a queen comes and they hit that with their king jack, they are convinced that they are good, so they're going to bet into you. And you can choose to raise, or you can just choose to call, because you continue to underrepresent your hand, and you can get paid off quite well there. So it does a few things. It controls the size of the pot. It allows you to continue with hand equity instead of being worried about getting re-raised, but it also underrepresents your hand, in which case you can take advantage of a more aggressive player in that way. The eighth thing that came to mind was about continuation betting. And really, I used to just C-bet everything. If I raised preflop, I continuation bet. Then I realized I was getting burned, so then I slowed way down. And I really didn't have a strategy around that. But a lot of the conversations that we've had recently on the podcast have talked about C-betting and what boards are good for continuation betting, for both us and our opponent, understanding the ranges that might hit a certain board. So understanding if I'm the preflop raiser and the flop comes king 7-4 rainbow, how that appears to my range versus the person who calls me, their range, or if the flop comes jack 10-9 with two hearts. Those are very different flops, and it should very much materially impact my decision if I want a continuation bet or not. And then also understanding that dynamic for when I'm the caller against a preflop raise as well and the continuation bet. So that's been a really good breakthrough for me, is strategically understanding the impact of a flop and ranges in the situation of continuation betting. So that's been good. Number nine, just realizing that sometimes they have it. If you listen to the podcast much, you know that I'm pretty much addicted to hero calling. And I continue to be addicted to it because it continues to be great. I continue to win a lot of pots because of it, but I do lose a fair amount. And at the end of the day, it increases variance pretty significantly. And sometimes I welcome that, sometimes I don't. But I really need to be careful to realize that sometimes they have it. A lot of people that re-raise me, a lot of people that make river shoves, they actually have it. And so I really need to do a better job of assessing, what's this player type? What's their range? What's their motivation for doing this? And really try to break that apart before I decide to hero call. So I think I need to start folding more. Those of you who are listening at this, don't take advantage of me now. I'm still going to hero call from time to time if it doesn't make sense. But whether it's on the river or whether it's earlier, just make sure I'm focused on making positive EV decisions, not take it personally if somebody bluffs me off of a fairly good hand. Just move on to the next one. Say it was a good decision, it wasn't worth the risk. And remember that my goal is not to win the most pots, my goal is to win the most chips. So, the strategy that I sometimes seem to have of winning small and losing big, I need to change that a little bit in those situations. So realizing sometimes they have it. The 10th thing is really realizing that I need to be who I am. I need to do those things that are best for my personality rather than worrying about other people's perception. And for me, what this means is I need to reincorporate wearing sunglasses into my game. I'm more confident, in my abilities. I believe it gives me a different image. I love wearing shades, but I'm always worried about being that guy because I worry about what people think of me. So I need to do that because I'm a better player when I'm wearing sunglasses. Also, I need to stop showing my hands. I show my hands too often. Not as often as some, but way too often. I should never give free information away. I should never feel bad about not giving free information away. So that's something else that I need to do for the good of my game. And also, you know, I love to be friendly at the table. I love the relationships that I've built with many of you guys that are listening. I love that part of it. But I also need to make sure I focus. And I know that when I'm too chatty, when I'm too friendly, there's too much personal engagement, I tend to play suboptimally. So I need to continue to figure out where that balance is of being friendly, getting to know people, but also staying focused on ranging my opponents, understanding how people are playing, looking at betting patterns, and all of those things. So I need to be who I am, and I need to not apologize for wanting to stay focused or wearing shades or not showing my hands. And finally, the last one is really understanding ICM implications around the bubble in smaller buy-in tournaments. ICM is the independent chip model. We've had episodes dedicated to this. And I'm pretty good at this when it comes to qualifiers, when it comes to playing day one of a multiple day event, even on the bubble of major tournaments. I'm good at this, but I feel where I'm lacking is in the smaller buy-in tournaments. If I play the $30, $50, $75 tournaments, where the structure is not as good, I tend to get down to 10 or 12 big blinds and think I'm in trouble. And the reality is, with that structure, I might still be in trouble, but I'm probably even above the chip average. Not that the average is something you want to use, but if you think about that and you think about the distribution, you've got some big stacks and you've got a ton of people with three or four big blinds or less, and I'm nearing the bubble and I'm thinking I've got 10 or 12 big blinds, I got to make something happen if I want to win this tournament. Well, that's true. But it's very different than if I'm in a major tournament where the average stack might be 50 big blinds. So I need to recognize that if I have 8 big blinds, yeah, it's going to be hard to really build a big stack. But in terms of ICM implications of just making the money first or even getting to the final table to get points for player of the week bonuses or whatever, I need to take that into account. So I think I need to re-strategize around what is short stack and really not just honing in on 10 or 12 or 15 big blinds, but honing in on how does that fit into the broader context? Where am I at? What are the ICM implications? If I just play one more orbit, not play a hand, will I make the money? Will I get the player of the week points? Those sorts of things. So I need to be better at that in terms of adjusting everything I've read, everything I've heard from the pros who talk about, you know, once you get down to 20 big blinds, you got to get it in. That's true, I think, in those big tournaments, but I think it scales down quite a bit for a lot of the tournaments that I play. So with that, those are my, I guess, key takeaways from the first almost year of the Rec Poker podcast. Obviously, a ton more that I've learned, but I just wanted to summarize that. This is super helpful just for me, and since I run the podcast, I get to say whatever I want, so ha, ha, ha. But hopefully, there's some things to take away from you as well. If you have any thoughts on that, things that really resonated with you or things that you think I completely missed or butchered, I'd love to have you give me feedback on that. My goal, as always, is to continue to become a better player myself, but also to share what I'm learning more broadly to help grow the game so that we increase the number and the quality of recreational players playing this cool game. So I'm happy to share what I'm learning, and hopefully it's valuable to you guys that are out there. But that is it for today. Again, subscribe to the podcast, rate it, leave a comment. Any other feedback or suggestions, get a hold of me on Facebook or Twitter. We have the Rec Poker group on Facebook. We have at Rec Poker on Twitter. Or you can email me, stevefredland@gmail.com. Just email me directly and let me know what you're thinking. So with that, I'm not sure. We're heading into the holiday season. I'm hoping to continue this each week, but of course it's going to be dependent on time and schedule for myself as well as our contributors. So hopefully we'll continue to have this every week throughout the holidays. But if not, I wish you all Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, whatever it is you're celebrating, if anything. Hopefully it involves some family, friends, and some fantastic food and some football and all those good things. So thanks for letting me be part of your poker learning, and I look forward to connecting with all of you at some future point. Take care.